But first, as we approach the 2020 legislative session, debates around education are again heating up, and the Democratic Superintendent of Public Instruction, Kathy Hoffman, is at the core. Republicans are already at odds with Hoffman over her management of state school voucher programs, and she's planning a fight against requirements for English language learners. All of that while she takes this time to prepare for what is sure to be another busy session at the Capitol. Superintendent Hoffman, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Let's begin with English immersion, English language learning, where that is. In the last session, I believe there was a 59-1 vote in the House, so very bipartisan as you can get, to repeal it, to do something, to at the very least send it to the ballot so voters could decide. So this is a top priority for you in the next session. Why is that, and why do you think it got caught up seemingly in politics in the last session?
Great questions. This is a top priority for me and my administration. We, within the department, have been doing a lot of work within our Office of English Language Acquisition on what is research and evidence-based practices for making sure we have the highest quality of instruction for our English language learners. And I actually prefer the term bilingual or multilingual students so that we're focusing on that as an asset rather than a deficit. So looking at the data in Arizona, I often point to our high school graduation rates. So our students who are identified as EL students are graduating at a rate of around 40%, whereas the state average is just under 80%, but for all students. But then the national average for students who are identified as EL students is around 67%. So we are significantly below the national average if we compare that 40% to the national average of 67%. So we are failing our bilingual and multilingual students in a state where we know we have a high population as a border state.
Let's talk about what the issue is there, right? And there was a little bit of a change that got through the legislature last session, right, that sort of got rid of one of the blocks in terms of the ELL programs. But why is this not working in this way?
That was a huge win, a great first step, and that reduced the restrictions. So that was reducing the requirement for our students to be in a four-hour block of English class to a two-hour minimum. And that has made a world of difference. We're still our schools are still transitioning to that, they have some time to implement that change. But by fully repealing the English-only law, it would actually give our schools even more flexibility, which I think is why we're seeing so much bipartisan support around this, is let's give our schools the chance to implement the best models for instruction rather than having such stringent requirements. And we need to also make it clear about with what was previously happening with the four-hour blocks is the students were being taken away from the native English-speaking peer models to a separate class where then, whereas we know that full immersion, being surrounded by English and having good models throughout the day, is even more effective than being separated out into a separate classroom.
It can be hard to be optimistic, I suppose, on this, but as I said, the House was so overwhelmingly bipartisan on this. You obviously want to push for this. Does that give you reason to think that with a little bit more groundwork and a little bit more communication, people are going to come together on this in both the House and the Senate, you and the governor as well?
I believe so. I feel very optimistic. And another reason is just to look to the public support for this. There was a poll that came out, I think it was back in the spring, that two-thirds of Arizonans strongly supported repealing the English-only law. And I think that it is also affected by the fact that so many families want dual language programs. We hear about immersion programs, whether that's Spanish or French or Mandarin, across the state, or even Navajo. Many of our indigenous communities are bringing back their indigenous languages, and I want to do everything we can to support that as well.
All right, let's transition and talk a little bit about the school voucher debate. So you have said that your office just isn't getting the funding it needs to carry this program out correctly. Some lawmakers have been critical of the way that you're handling the program. What do you think the issue is?
This has been a historic issue, not just for my administration, but even past administrations, that while the growth of the program, the student enrollment has been increasing at a very high rate. We have gone from around 1,300 students in 2015 to now over 6,000, and we expect over 8,000 students to be enrolled by the end of next year. And if you think about that, that means that we're essentially administering a mid-sized school district, and we have all those parents that have questions, concerns, calls, and we have many hundreds of new applications coming in that we're processing that are very complex to process. So while the enrollment and the demands of the program have grown exponentially, the funding has remained flat since the inception of the program, actually. And while the legislature has well, what's in statute actually says that we need 4% of administrative costs to administer the program. We have been receiving closer to 1.6%. And that's millions of dollars of difference. And I think parents should be outraged. If I was an ESA receiving family, I would be outraged that the legislature is sitting on millions of dollars. It is literally sitting in a bank account that is meant to be administered to help us hire more staff. And we have a very clear plan that we have outlined for what we would do with that funding. We would hire more staff so that we could improve customer service and make sure that we're addressing the concerns of the families we're serving.
Okay, we just have a few minutes left with you. So Steve and I both want to talk about some other priorities that you have going into this next, what we said will be obviously a busy legislative session. Teacher pay, I think, is still an issue with a lot of people, that we still have an ongoing teacher shortage. What things are you looking at?
That is absolutely one of my highest priorities. And to address the shortages we're seeing of not just teachers, but across many of our educational professions, we are formalizing that work in the department by creating a team. I created a couple new positions, and we're kind of repurposing some positions, moving things around a little bit. So we will actually have a team made up of 5 people, a director and program specialist levels, to be focused on teacher and educator recruitment and retention. And so pay is an issue, and so while we are seeing the 20 by 2020 plan is ending this coming year, I was just looking over the data, and for some schools and some teachers, that they are still only making $35,000 a year, which to me is not a livable wage. And we need to be looking at what is regionally competitive. And Utah is talking about having a statewide starting teacher salary at $60,000. If they make that move, what are our graduates going to do when they graduate and want to become a teacher and start their careers? If some schools here are starting at $35,000 and then they can go to Utah and make $60,000, we need to stay regionally competitive and take this very seriously.
We just have a few seconds left. I want to ask you about something I heard you say on another program, which is maybe there should be a 25 by 2025. Tell us more about just in general what your thoughts are going forward on that.
My thoughts are we need to keep going, that we can't let this slide, that we can't just say we checked the box, because again, teachers are still only making sometimes we're not regionally competitive. So we need to keep going. I think part of me wonders, is 25 by 2025 enough? But I wanted to put a number out there and start having that to start that dialogue. And we also need to be looking holistically at benefits, workload, classroom sizes. There's so many other issues of what's affecting the shortages that we're seeing across the state. So we're going to be digging into all of that.
Arizona Superintendent of Public Instruction, Kathy Hoffman, thanks as always.
Thank you.